the platform. Step up and speak out.
It is ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Kwedadai. It is the platform. Thank you very much for joining us. And just to remind you of just a few of the frequencies you can listen to us on, Motare 95.4, Bulawayo 106.7, and of course we're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. And if you want to listen to us over the internet, just go to the TuneIn app, download it for free, and listen to us live and in charge. And today, this week's episode comes on the backdrop of disturbances that we saw in parts of Zimbabwe. We saw an unfortunate loss of life and property. And tonight I have the Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Mr. Nick Mangwana. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
So, a lot has happened in the past week. Today, things appear to have some semblance of normalcy. How can damage to property, injury to people, and death be avoided in future?
The loss of life, loss of property and limb was quite unfortunate in a situation where people have chosen to have some political expression. The vandalism, crime, and undermining of other civil liberties, again, is quite unfortunate, or was quite unfortunate. It is a responsibility on Zimbabweans to find that expression without impinging on another person's rights and freedoms. How it can be avoided, again, it's not so much of a policing matter, it's so much of citizens taking responsibility and regarding the rights of other people. Because saying, can we guarantee that it won't happen? We cannot guarantee that crime won't be committed, because these were criminal acts. So as much as we cannot guarantee that there won't be any burglary, we cannot guarantee that there won't be any pickpockets in the country. But as much as possible, as government, we'll try to mitigate situations when such lawlessness would arise. So government should be and will be prepared in cases like this, in cases where threats have been made. Because look at how it is. These were meant to be stairways. Now, stairways mean basically people don't go to work or they stay at home. But no, people were not on the road at home. They were on the roads, barricading the roads, stopping other people from going to work. They were at schools harassing students and teachers, making sure they don't go about their own business. The people were out there robbing toll gates. They were out there burning police cars and attacking other civilians. They were out there robbing shops. That's not staying away. So the question is, can we make sure that people don't steal? Can we make sure people don't rob? Can we make sure people don't attack other people? Yes, we can make sure, and we should make sure that it doesn't happen again. Just as much as we are doing now, when we are saying the country has gone back to normalcy. Security is visible. It's everywhere. People are going their own business, and there is a lot of assurance that's going on to the people. That's what all we can do as a government. And obviously, perpetrators of crime have to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law as a deterrent on others.
Okay. Based on that, some of the protesters say have grievances, and one of those that's been cited was the recent fuel price increases. What's your comment on that?
The protests had nothing to do with fuel price increases at all. These protests, we know the build-up to them. They were not spontaneous. They were planned. The president announced the fuel price review on Saturday night. That is on the 12th at night. These riots happened on Monday, planned as they were beforehand. So no, this has nothing to do with anything. When the president announced these fuel price reviews, he actually announced 6 interventions with them. Which interventions are in place right now? Interventions which are making sure that people are not affected by these price increases. Has the price of bread gone up? Not that I know of. Has any other price of anything gone up? Not that I know of. What we know went up.
There are indications that some prices have.
Like what?
I mean, there were the images of certain products such as juices and so forth that I've got?
No, I haven't seen those. But if you have any, if you show me, I'll be very happy to comment on those. But what I know is the prices that went up were the prices for the committing prices. Fares went up. Why? Because people did not listen to the interventions. The interventions were very clear that there was a mechanism in place to make sure that the commuting companies, the companies that ferry people to work, to and from work and so on, would not be affected. The companies that, the industries, the tourists and so on, would not be affected. The interventions were there. The interventions are still there.
But the grievances went beyond the fuel price. For example, some of those who set up the protest say they were, you know, unhappy about the fuel. I mean, not the fuel tax, but the 2% tax. They cited a couple of other grievances outside that one.
If I'm not mistaken, this 2% tax came in October. Am I wrong? I think I'm right. They came in October. We are in January. So I'm saying, why now? Why now? The 2% tax has not gone because it's going to be there and it's going to help us pay our debts. Zimbabwe has paid its debts for a very, very long time, actually. We are in arrears everywhere. We owe literally everyone money. Our debt as a country right now stands at nearly 18 billion, domestic and foreign. Somebody has to pay that. As a country, we need a culture to pay our debts. And as a people, actually, I'm sure somebody owes you money and they don't want to pay. And the same to me. Somebody owes me money, they don't want to pay. And it goes all the way top country, institutionally as a country. We're not paying our debts. And for a country to pay its debts, somebody has to pay. And it is the citizens. Citizens have to pay tax so that we pay our debts. All our investment and our credit rating is poor. Yes, it's poor because we've got sanctions, but it's also poor because we don't want to pay our debts. And the only way government can do that is for government to mobilize money from its citizens. And that is via taxes. And at the moment, or before the 2% tax, only a small group of people were paying taxes. The few people who were employed like you, when you pay your pay as you earn, that's when you're paying your tax. Even companies were not paying. A lot of our economy is informalized. So, you know, people do whatever they do to earn a living. They hustle and whatever. This 2% tax was a way of spreading the tax burden among the whole citizenry. And yes, you can, as you know, other countries are adopting it. Because we had to recognize that our economy is different from any other economy because of the percentage of people in informal industry. So that 2% tax is a, yes, people might be, you know, aggrieved that they're paying that money. But we know what it has done so far. We know how much has been raised so far. And we, going by the prediction, we believe by 2021, we'd have cleared our debts. All 18 billion of it, if nothing goes wrong. And what a noble idea. A country that pays its debts and it's in good unison and a good concord with the rest of the international community, with the rest of the nations.
Okay, if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, it's at ZFM Stereo. On our Facebook is facebook.com/ZFM Stereo. I'm here in talking to the Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Mr. Nick Mangwana, and we're talking about the events of last week. Now, of course, another aspect that there was a loss of was a loss of earnings among people who were not able to work, particularly the first 3 days of last week. What do you say to people who are not able to engage in business?
I'm sorry that commerce was disrupted, and I'm sorry that business was disrupted, because we say Zimbabwe is open for business, and Zimbabwe was supposed to be open for business. But if somebody had chosen not to go to work, that would have been their choice. And it was up to the employer to get another person to do the job, because we've got a lot of unemployed people. However, there is remedy within our statutes for that. The organizers of this happening, the organizers of these disturbances, are obligated by law to pay compensation. If you organize a demonstration and something goes wrong, the law says it's your responsibility. You people have got two avenues: the criminal avenue, you still pay via the criminal, the route under POSA, or the civil avenue. I hope the organizers can afford it. They have to compensate the people that lost their monies. They have to compensate the people that lost limb. They have to pay the hospital bills for the people that got hurt. That is what the law says. But as a nation, Let's try to come together and rebuild our country. Let us say no to this. Let us not have this again. It takes a lot to build a business. The people whose business were burned are not government. They are not the leaders. They are individuals, entrepreneurs who worked hard, sacrificing family expenditure so that they could build something for their future. And it's not your right to come and burn it down just because you can. Or it's not your right to come and burn it down because you've looted from it and then you say, let me finish off whatever is left, and you burn it down. I don't believe there's an insurance company that is able to cover. And anyway, most insurance companies or policies have got a clause against riot. So they will not pay if damages happened because of a riot. So you have impoverished somebody because you're poor. No, I'm saying because you're poor, because you're saying the price of this is high or the price of that is high, so I'm poor. But now you believe it's your right to go and burn another person's business whom maybe they worked 40 years or more for it. No, it ain't right. And it's not a reflection of what we stand for as a Zimbabwe.
So, based on that, we were talking about, before I go ahead with that, is there an indication of how much loss in terms of, over the last week in terms of property and whatever else may be, is there an indication of the number?
Not yet. We are still aggregating the numbers.
Okay, because there was an interview that we saw with the minister who said that it came up to about 800 million. Would that have been correct?
I'm not sure where he was getting the figures from, but that's a possibility. I would put, but it's a thoughts of figure, but I would put it at over a billion, actually. Because if you are talking, say, 40 shops were burned in Blue Air, come on. We're talking of the goods themselves. We're talking of the merchandise in the building itself. We're talking of over 30 cars burned. We're talking of a full police station burned. Two police stations. We're talking of shops smashed in Remoka. Loads of them. We're talking of other houses smashed. We're talking of a toll gate being burned down to the ground. All those, that's a lot of money and that's a lot of investment. So yeah, 800 million sounds quite a little bit conservative, actually, but that's me. It's magic.
Okay, there was a figure that was actually brought out by the Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services. I just wanted to see if you can...
It's a figure we had got as an estimate that time, because obviously I worked in that ministry and we worked around that figure together. But I'm saying I believe that was a conservative figure. As more people are saying, this got burned, that got burned, that got looted, we are accumulating more figures.
The compensation aspect is important for me, because in the event that there's a stalemate, between who's blaming who for what happened, the reality of the situation is those 40 businesses will still not be able to engage in any form of commerce. Is there any other way for intervention to get those businesses working so that the mantra of Zimbabwe is open for business is pursued further?
Let's not to and fro over the responsibility. The law is very clear.
We're just talking about, I'm sitting at home.
I hear you.
And I have a shop that's been burned.
I hear you.
And I don't know what our law is going to take recourse either way.
The law is very clear where the responsibility lies. The responsibility lies with the person that organized an event that has gone wrong. Doesn't matter what has happened. The person who organized the event is responsible. So that's is a different question. We put it away.
Okay, let's put that.
So we rest that one.
What about
we come to the second
capacity?
Page. That's a different question again. Who organized these events? Do they have the capacity? How much can we get from them? That's one. Two, the question of can, which I believe is the frame of the question, can government do something to help the businessman that has lost their livelihoods? The government will discuss, but we will continue. Our attitude and our ethos is to support business. Whether there has been a riot or not, we'll support business. Whether that business was vandalized or not, we'll support business. And it is the same ethos that will apply in each case.
So, I also want to talk about the what you refer to as the informal trader. The person was saying, okay, the cost of fuel has gone up to $3 before by the weekend, and I'm still coming back to do business in an environment where that particular cost, because I don't exist in those companies that have access to rebates and things of that nature, and other interventions that you've put together for the transport sector and things of that nature. How do I, because my issues in terms of affordability to run a business and fuel being such a huge cost structure, a huge cost in the structure of what I do, are there any planned interventions for my kind of business, which suddenly has had such an increase in that particular cost factor?
Okay, in your cost structure. Okay, yes, there is a lot. And it puts an obligation on both of us, meaning yourself and the government. One is formalize your business and access all these rebates. That is one. So you do your part, and then the government will make sure you get the rebates and you won't be affected by the price increase.
So let's talk about, I'm not in manufacturing, mining, transport, or any of those. Maybe I'm in the services industry, which is...
Actually, the services part of it. Transport is services.
No, I'm talking about a different type of services industry that is not covered
for
by...
For example,
that.
What are we talking about? Because if we need to break it down so that we can conceptualize, we are too abstracted right now.
Okay, let's talk about a media company.
Informalized media company.
No, a formal media company. Like how does it work? Let's get so that people understand at home
how would the rise in fuel affect you, for example?
Well, so for example, the fact that you've got to fuel your cars, you've got to transport people, you've got to do all your costs are being put into that factor. So I'm just asking, maybe it's not necessarily a media company, it's somebody who's registered who is actually having to had an increase in cost in terms of one of their inputs, one of their overheads that I'm talking about.
The fuel input is not meant to have a completely zero effect on everybody, but it's meant to have zero effect or little effect on the people that are in key sectors, economic prosperity drivers. It might have an effect on you. That will happen, and in those particular cases, you will have to make a case. The government is listening. If you believe that you are your industry is key and you shouldn't be affected, then come and we talk.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we keep talking about this very important issue. We're talking to the permanent secretary in the Ministry of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Mr. Nick Mangwane. You listen to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. You're still tuning in to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. We are talking to the permanent secretary in the Ministry of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Mr. Nick Mangwane. Before the break, we talked about the different industries, and one of those that may feel they've been affected was people affected by the internet shutdown. And you say it's not particular to Zimbabwe. Is that enough justification for the action there?
The decision that was made was a security decision, which I can't comment much on because it's security, based on the intelligence that was available. There definitely was an impact and an effect on business. There was an impact in effect on how we operate as government ourselves, because obviously we operate in the new information age, and even as Ministry of Information we're affected. But as government, government has to weigh. Do we have a burning country, or do we have a country that's not communicating much because the phones were working? That's not communicating much, or that whose business is handicapped here and there, but it's secure. Then I think the former, the security issue trumped the convenience issue at that point. So that's what this decision that was made.
So one of the key sectors that has been affected was the social media, and that remains blocked at this instance. Will it be lifted, and when?
What do you mean by social media is if you don't have VPN? And what do you mean by social media is if you're not on Telegram? I know, Larry, you are one of my contact list and you're on social media. So be specific. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm saying, access, like, without what? Having to use a VPN and things of that nature.
And you're using Telegram and Instagram. So yes. The social media operator, Larry.
My question is, when will, before last week, where people just switch on their phones and just access the internet just like pretty much everyone else in the world.
You're asking whether people can access, when people would access Twitter, Facebook, and WhatsApp, and so on.
Necessary to
block. Ah, I see. I'm not too sure. The threat assessment is taking place, and a decision will be made after that threat assessment has been concluded. But it's not my area of purview. The security operators are dealing with that, and the ministries which are involved, and they are dealing with that. But I can assure you that the decision to switch those particular sites back on would be made as soon as it's security-wise possible and safe.
But you must understand, though, that, for example, if citizens are having to go through a VPN, right, what kind of message is that sending out to the rest of the world? As far as access to information is concerned,
I can understand that people would not be happy. Naturally, I can understand.
Sure about happiness. You just tweet your ministry, I suppose, using a VPN, tweeted today about the new Zupco buses. And who are you tweeting to when the citizens cannot access it?
We are communicating. Let's be pragmatic here. I said my contact list, almost everybody on my contact list is on some social media site or on the other. The blocked ones are there, but you people have circumvented that is expected. So we are talking to the people like you who actually saw the tweet, and everyone else who is listening to this, we have seen the tweet, because people can access the social media. The convenience you are looking for is not there, because you have to download something else, but the point is people on social media. So we are communicating to those on social media because they are citizens. We don't want to marginalize anyone. We will not leave anyone behind. And those are the ones we're talking about.
But we're not talking about that. That's fine, but we talk about the messaging. Let's talk about Zimbabwe being open for business, the mantra that is very important. If I run a business and I'm looking at coming to Zimbabwe, and I'm thinking at some point, social media is just going to disappear at some point.
Okay.
And maybe I need to communicate with people, and I don't necessarily know if they're going to be on VPN or not. And there are many people sitting at home that probably don't even know about VPNs.
Mm-hmm. So they will disappear to social media. Send them texts. But go on.
But I mean, it kind of takes a certain level of dignity from somebody, because they feel like they're stealing access to the internet.
Okay.
To those social
Let's
media
talk
sites.
About that visit. Mm-hmm. That visit has given two options. You go into a burning country, or you go into a country where you have to access certain people via VPN. Given a choice, what would you choose? A country where informal roadblocks are set, and stones and logs and boulders are on the road, or one for a little time has no access to Facebook and Twitter? I'm sure you would opt for one whose everything is working except Twitter, Facebook, and WhatsApp. That's a serious investor will make that decision to say, do I want to go into a war zone where stones are flying everywhere, where tires are burning everywhere, where buildings are being looted, or one without all this? Because just a few months ago, countries like Ethiopia had so much investment, but they had no social media. I was there in Addis Ababa. I could not access all these sites. Maybe even countries like Rwanda, there are certain sites you cannot access. China, there are certain sites you cannot access. Saudi Arabia, Dubai, all these countries, there are certain sites you cannot access. But everything runs because security is there. But in Zimbabwe, we don't intend to keep going that way. We said until the security situation has been sorted out properly, until all these many patrols have stopped, and until the threat assessment is positive, people will be inconvenienced just for a little bit, and we're sorry about that decision.
So just to be clear, just to ask you a very clear question, there's no expectation that these platforms will never return?
There's no such an expectation. In fact, one of the first things that President Mnangagwa did when he came to power is to reduce the cost of bundles by 60%, is to remove a standalone means of cyber security. That showed his attitude towards social media. And what else did he do? He opened social media accounts. And yesterday, he used one to inform the nation that he was coming. So, it's not going to be a president. He's not going to be a president who is going to talk to people that are banished from social media. He will talk to citizens because they've got access to his message on social media. That's why he used that platform.
Okay, you still tune into ZFM Stereo. I will ask you about that a little bit later, but I do want to raise this. The human rights groups have raised red flags over the manner in which people are being arrested and tried. What's the procedure when one is arrested?
It's a long procedure, as you know. You are arrested, a statement is taken off you, you are read your rights, in fact, before that you have the right to show to a lawyer, you have the right to remain silent and so forth. In America, they say you are under arrest. So you are under arrest, after that, you appear within 48 hours before a magistrate. If you're with a lawyer, then if you are going to be tried, they are given the state papers, and you go to trial, and they do their defense outline, and you go to trial. That's the rough process. I'm not sure if you could be more direct or contextualize your question for me to know exactly what you really want to know.
Well, there are allegations.
You do not want. You're not looking for a lecture in the criminal justice system or procedure.
No, it's not for me. It's for the person sitting at home, so that they understand.
Narrow the question a bit and go where we want us to.
Yes, having answered my question is, there have been allegations by human rights NGOs and so forth, that some of the arrests are taking place and people are being not being given the benefit of the full justice system as far as trials are concerned. In some instances, people are picked up. It's allegations that someone got arrested and they were found guilty within 24 hours and things of that nature. And some people say that is not sufficient access to the justice system.
I'm not sure about that case or those cases, but I can tell you this. Fast-track cases or fast-tracking cases is not a new phenomenon in the criminal justice system. In South Africa, during the World Cup, they actually had fast-track cases for mugging and whatever anyone was. You would be fast-tracked. You were arrested today. I can tell you tomorrow you're going down if you're convicted. In Britain, when they had the riots in 2011, they actually set up fast-track courts. And those people were fast-tracked through the criminal justice system.
Have we been informed that fast-track courts have been set up for this purpose?
One does not have to be informed in that sense, that there's fast-track courts which have been established.
But in South Africa,
no,
they did that.
What could be done in particular cases would be, as a matter of policy, the criminal justice system can simply say, let's give priority to these cases because there are many. We want them through the conveyor belt as soon as possible. If somebody is going to be acquitted, let them be acquitted. The gathering of the evidence, the presenting of the evidence and everything has to be given priority. They're not going to be on the court for a very long time, coming in for remand and back to the to prison and back and until your case is heard. All we want is we need priority to these cases. What could happen in those cases? We already got anti-corruption courts. People can use those. Remember, we've got a lot of magistrates and everything, right?
I get you, but I'm going back to the places you made reference to. Advanced statements are made in, like, this is what we're going to do. This is not a normal set of circumstances. This is what we're going to do. Could the government not have communicated as such if that was the case in this particular instance?
I consider the point that maybe people want to know that there's fast-track courts. I will speak to the Minister of Justice, and if we are running, I was just giving an example that things have happened elsewhere. Now, if you want us to say we are fast-tracking them, and the Minister of Justice has confirmed that, I will issue a statement to say we are fast-tracking them. And if that was an oversight, then we'll apologize.
You still listen to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, and the voice that you hear and there is the Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Mr. Nick Mangwana. We made reference a little bit earlier to the President saying he's coming back, and he tweeted that he's returning to Zimbabwe and skipping the World Economic Forum that's taking place in Davos. What is the reason for him coming back when things seem to have normalized now?
He's the president. So he does his own schedule and he decides whatever security matter or issues that he believes needs his urgent attention. In this particular case, we know that between now and Friday or Saturday, when he was supposed to come back, there's a long time, he was already in total engagement in Eastern Europe. He has done those and is coming home to take control of the situation. People are still complaining of this thing or the other. And I can tell you that still during these disturbances, he was kept apprised and he was giving direction.
So when do we expect him?
Tonight.
Okay, and so in essence, is there any specific action that is expected to take, or is just coming back?
I wouldn't be able to predict what a president does because I'm not one, but he would give us direction definitely on how to deal with certain matters. That's why he's the president.
I think we'll be anxious to get that from him. So now, and then the other thing that I want to ask you about is the mass public transport system that has just been currently in Harare, where, and you're using ZUPCO as a vehicle for that particular.
That's correct.
So how viable is it, first of all? And secondly, is it meant to replace the commuter omnibuses that already exist?
No. It's very viable. It's modern in the sense of how other countries, modern countries, run their mass public transport system. I've lived a few years in Britain and I've seen how they work with Metrobus, we've got Aviva and so whatever those buses are called. But it's almost like a consortium or franchises which run the public transportation system. It's the same model. So your question of how good it is, I think it's a very good skip. But your other question is sustainability. We expect it to be very sustainable and to be a model for the future. I was talking to ZUPCO acting chief executive yesterday, and I said to them, we in Britain there are applications to actually monitor the progress of the bus. If you're expecting a bus to come at say 7:20 and the bus is not there, or you get to the bus station, you can actually check the bus and say, oh, I'm at Makone, my bus is now at Maruta coming to pick me up. That you can do that. And they told me they've already developed that
system.
That application system, and they would be launching it once things have evened out now.
Okay, so who's the target for this? At present, we see that you're focusing a lot on.
You indicated whether we were trying to throw commuters out of business. No, not by all means. But I'll give you a few statistics. Harare is good of 12,000 commuters. Only 3,000 are registered. 9,000 are not. In our earlier conversation, we said we are trying to formalize our economy. The unregistered commuters, some are not insured. Some are being driven by unlicensed drivers. Some are driven by people who are not actually sober. The former ones, because they pay their taxes, they pay for the permits and so forth, they normally try to do things in a business like way. So the mass transport system gives the commuter an opportunity to make a choice. Are you going to choose this or are you going to choose that? That's number one. Number two, the presence of ZUPCO helps mediate fares. And right now, today, it's dragged down the fares. The combis were now charging exactly what ZUPCO is charging. And that can only benefit the commuter and the customer. And that's what competition does. We are only saying, compete freely. We will still continue to give permits to combis. We will still continue asking for them to prioritize safety and among us other things. We will still say, be courteous and drive normally. Be normal. We do not want Harare streets to be jungle. We do not want our roads to be jungle. And I think we're going in that direction. If you went to Resende and all other terminal, you will find that there was actually no mass. A combi parking this side and a bus parking that side. People choosing where to go. A combi gets two people, it says, no, I'm leaving. And it rushes off. It's again only convenience the commuter. The ZUPCO comes. It's not staying too long in the terminal. It drives off because it's picking all its passengers on the way. That competition is good. As long as nobody is overspeeding, it can only convenience the consumer. And who, in this case, is the commuter.
And a further question on that, some of the questions that have come up on social media is, where are people going to get their buses from? Is this the old system where people are going to be at bus stops and things of that nature?
There will be bus stops, and there are going to be many bus stops. There are a lot of companies that want to advertise. Those are the people that are going to construct a lot of bus shelters, because they've said, we want, you know, they've made offers. I think people are just looking at the procurement laws, whether you know, it's first come, first serve. Well, we have to advertise and say people come and build bus shelters, but the bus shelters is a billboard, literally. So that's, there will be a lot of bus shelters because we don't want anyone, we don't want to wait in the rain. They are timetables. For there to be a timetable, there has to be a designated bus stop, because the bus stop has to say this bus will be at this site, at this bus stop, at this time. So there has to be a designated bus stop. I hope I'm answering your question. I'm not answering my own.
Then, pursuant to that, you did. How many buses are we on right now, and how many buses do we foresee, say, for example, by the end of the month?
We are on 143. Sorry, we're on 143 buses as of today. We expect another 16 to be coming, 15, 16. So that will be 158, 159. Then we expect, hopefully, by the end of the week, to be over 200 buses. And as we go on, we will accumulate more, and we can go get over 1,000, because if this is working very well, there's no reason why we shouldn't roll it further. When we had our meeting with the providers on Saturday, we had 106 buses. Yesterday, I got a call from both Professor Morira and Honorable Chassi, the Deputy Minister of Transport. By the way, Professor Morira is the acting Minister of Transport. That's why he's involved. So I got a call to say, we are having a meeting at 1 o'clock. We have 40 more buses that have come. And then the providers came and said, we're offering. And as of today, I think the moment people have seen that this is working and there is security, because the biggest concern for the bus operators was the security of the bus. And now they've seen that the security is guaranteed and there is security. I hear there are a lot more inquiries, and other providers are coming in, and this is the private partnership, you know, private partnership agreements that we're reaching with this. It's working for everybody. It's working for government, it's working for the citizen, and it's working for the private investor.
So the private investor in this instance, so there shouldn't be too much of a fear of people saying government is becoming a player in the market that it also regulates.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What's the conditions that are there for ZUPCO, as you rightly said, ZUPCO is only a, a vehicle. ZUPCO has got its own buses. I think you've seen them. But it's also managing all these franchises that are coming in, all these players. So what's literally happening is these guys are going and surrendering their buses to ZUPCO. And ZUPCO will pay them at the end of the agreed period. Like if they agreed with ZUPCO to be paid weekly, they were paid weekly. If they agreed with ZUPCO to be paid monthly, they were paid monthly for the use of their bus. That's what's happening. So as it works, you have a bus, your two buses, and think, no, I want to be part of this. You will come to ZUPCO and say, can I have this contract? ZUPCO will give you the contract and say, these are the conditions. Give us your bus. It's now going to Chikwana. It goes to Chikwana. And another one person comes and say, I've got 17 buses. I want them to run in Bulawayo. And then say, okay, fine. The contract is agreed, and the terms are agreed, and the bus runs in there. And under the auspices of ZUPCO, the conductor is ZUPCO, the driver is yours.
So then, adding to that, the worry is that before ZUPCO fell, some people say it was corruption and so forth. There have been evidence of all sorts of things that affected ZUPCO. What safety nets are there right now? Because, you know, that worries for some people, not necessarily many, may persist.
It's a genuine worry, I think. It's a genuine concern, rather, because history shapes how we think, and history shapes how we feel, and we are a product of our experiences. So the government knows very well that ZUPCO is where it is, because something went wrong, and that thing that went wrong was poor management, and maybe some say poor funding. This model will work because, one, the government is keeping a very close eye on this, and two, the whole ethos that come with a new dispensation are going to be imbued in ZUPCO. And if they do not work according to the demands of this modernization, then people who do a good job will be recruited, and the ones who are failing to deliver will be asked to step aside. Okay. As the new dispensation.
Okay. And then, before we go, I do want to ask, can you assure the country that all is well from now on?
that's the assurance we're going to give the country, that all is well from now. We are returning to normalcy. There are things that are not yet back to where they're supposed to be. For example, the social media was still not, sites are still not operating. So, but we're going towards those things operating. The president is not in the country. We're going towards the president coming in tonight. All those things are what we call normal. And we are going there. Some businesses, some schools are not open. We are very much aware of it. We continue to encourage parents to take their children to school. We know that the Education Act stops them from keeping kids at home. Government has no intention of going to drag their kids from home. But we are saying to parents, do not inconvenience your children. Do not risk their future by depriving them of their right to education. That's, we want normalcy. We want schools open. We want teachers delivering the education that the learners need and deserve.
Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services, Mr. Nick Mangwana, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Hello, Bernie.